You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, Tim McMaster here, taking you around the American League East for MLB.com Extras, and we are starting this week with the Toronto Blue Jays making a run at the top of the division, and we start with Mike Wilner, Blue Jays broadcaster. Mike, thanks for taking a few minutes to join us on the podcast.
Oh, well, thanks for asking me to pinch hit. Happy to do it.
Yeah, Mike taking the place of Gregor for the week. And, Mike, the Blue Jays snapped the three-game skid on Wednesday night. They did it with power, which is usually what this team does. But despite that three-game losing streak, when you look at what this team's been doing lately, you look at the standings, right now 2.5 back in the East. They've been playing good baseball. They're hitting. They've been pitching for the most part. You have to like where this team is, right, with 2 weeks to go before the All-Star break?
You have to love the way the place that this team is, especially given the way they've played this year. I mean, they haven't exceeded expectations in any fashion, except for the starting pitching. The offense that was supposed to be crazy potent is near the top of the major leagues in home runs, but not in runs scored, and they're not scoring runs nearly at the rate where we expected a month ago. This was a bottom five offense in all of Major League Baseball, and they've woken up, but still not performing the way we expected them to be performing. The bullpen has disappointed, though it's coming around. They've won 21 to 32, so everything is kind of correcting itself. But given the way they started, to be right in the thick of everything is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, let's get into the offense and the improved offense a little bit, because here comes the reigning MVP in the American League, right? Josh Donaldson, player of the week in the American League last week, where he hit .444, three homers, nine RBIs in the seven games. He's kept it up this week. I think most people expected him to be great again this year, but there's always a little bit of a question, because last year he was so much better at the plate than he had been in Oakland. I mean, don't get me wrong, he was a great player with the A's, but he was so good with the Blue Jays in 2015. I think there was some question how close to that he could get again, but right now he is locked in and looking like that MVP-quality player again.
I never had a question, to be honest. You know, you look at what Donaldson did in especially in 2013 in Oakland. He had a bad September in 2014. He was playing hurt, so that kind of knocked his numbers down. But that's playing in Oakland, that ballpark, and in the AL West, Seattle and Anaheim and places where it's not so easy to hit, right? And you move to the AL East in Toronto immediately, playing 81 games in Toronto as opposed to playing 81 games in Oakland should put your numbers through the roof. And it's why I sort of, and I don't want to say I expected him to be one of the five best hitters in baseball, but I sort of expected this from Michael Saunders, too, getting out of Seattle and that ballpark, where that gets in your head and into a place like Toronto. I think that jump is hugely significant. And Donaldson was top eight MVP finisher his first two full seasons in Oakland. So, you know, the jump from 29 to 40 home runs is, I mean, it's, I don't know if you could say, well, going from Oakland to Toronto, you're going to increase your home run rate by 33%. But, I mean, playing in Boston and New York, where it's easy to hit home runs, and Baltimore left field, you know, all that stuff, moving from the AL West to the AL East is hugely significant in expecting an improvement in offensive performance. So, yeah, I expected Donaldson to be able to maintain close to it, be a top five MVP candidate as he has been before, and hopefully this stiff neck that he's got now isn't going to force him to miss any significant time, because he is really starting to come around, just like a lot of other guys on this team.
Yeah, he left the game in the ninth inning on Wednesday. The off day for the club on Thursday, hopefully that helps him out and he'll be okay to go on Friday. You mentioned other guys coming around. Wow, here comes Edwing, and it was special on Wednesday because it was Edwing t-shirt night. They had a parrot in the dugout. I mean, this team's certainly having some fun right now. And Encarnacion goes and hits another home run, continues to pile up RBIs. And I, you know, everybody's talked. You have Bautista, you have Encarnacion, both these guys free agents at the end of the year. What's the team going to do? Which one do you hold on to? And it continues to be tough to answer that question, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But you know what? There's I tell people here in Toronto anyway who get hung up on that I don't care right now. It was the same thing with David Price last year. When David Price came here in August, the Blue Jays, as the Blue Jays' final piece to try to win a championship, which they ultimately fell a little bit short of, and, you know, immediately, August 1st, the call was, well, are they going to keep David Price? What are they going to do? David Price is going to be a free agent. Are you going to keep David Price? And my answer was, I don't care. It doesn't matter. In Toronto, we have waited so long for a team that was capable of doing great things that all we do is get hung up on what's going to happen in the offseason. Who are they going to keep? What are they going to do? It doesn't matter. Use them, win, and then figure it out. And that's my attitude with Bautista and Edwin as well. Use them to win, and then let's see what happens. Jose, with the injury, with the turf toe, going to be out for a while, and he's, you know, only hitting in the 230s, 240s. He's not having a typical Jose Bautista year, even though he's getting on base. He's hitting some home runs, but the overall numbers are going to be down, given this probably month that he's going to miss. So is he going to be able to go out and get 4 and 100 on the market? I don't think so anymore, and certainly not the same as if he had had a healthy year. Edwin is on fire right now, but Edwin is also, you know, he's got a bad body, and he's not a guy who looks like he's going to age well. And he has these little minor injuries all the time. It's a hand, it's a back, it's a, you know, all these little things. So what's he going to be able to get long-term from somebody? I don't know that either. I know that with Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista in 2016, the Blue Jays can be one of the best teams in Major League Baseball. So that's what we need to concentrate on.
Yeah, the answer is enjoy the team that you have while you have it, I guess.
Absolutely.
But fans always look into the future. It's just something I think we do as sports fans, always looking at next year. But, yeah, certainly enjoy this team. Interesting, you brought up last year in the trade deadline everything this team did, because on Monday, Ross Atkins came out and said he doesn't see this team making any major moves before the deadline this year. He did cite getting Tulo back now. They'll get Bautista back. They're going to get Brett Cecil back. So there's guys that are going to be added to this roster that will help. I think part of this is they don't really have the system and maybe the prospects to go out and get somebody like they did a year ago. But if they're on the outside looking in but not out of it at the deadline, do you think he sticks to that? Or do you think this team could pull the trigger on a significant move?
I guess it depends on what significant means.
Yeah.
I think that they'll be looking and they'll be shopping and they'll be trying to add to the pitching at the deadline. I don't think that there's a David Price who's coming, but that doesn't mean that all the other stuff that happened couldn't happen too. Although, you know, we got spoiled last year because Alex Anthopoulos had the greatest trade deadline that you could argue any general manager has ever had in Major League Baseball history.
Yeah.
He overhauled 20% of the roster. He filled every hole, and he did it with, you know, he brought in some, like, borderline Hall of Famers in David Price and Troy Tulowitzki, along with the supporting characters Mark Lowe and LaTroy Hawkins, and a leadoff man in Ben Revere. I don't think anyone's ever had a better deadline, but that's not going to happen this year. But like you said, Ross Atkins said, well, they'll be getting Bautista back, they'll be getting Brett Cecil back, they'll be getting Aaron Sanchez back in the bullpen, but they, you know, it's going to open up a hole in the rotation. I think that, I don't know. I don't know these new guys as well as I knew the old regime, so I don't really know what Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins are going to do at the deadline if the Blue Jays are in it but not there, or, you know, have holes that need filling in order to make themselves a championship team. This is the window, though. I mean, this is a pretty much a win or bust year. You mentioned Edwin and Bautista being free agents. They are. So is Michael Saunders. So is Justin Smoke. So is Brett Cecil. So is Drew Storen, R.A. Dickey. You know, the Blue Jays have 10 significant free agents coming up. So this is the year. And I think they recognize that, and I think that if they can work to put them over the top this year, they probably will do something. The system obviously isn't as deep as it was last year because they traded, 13 pitchers at the deadline last year. But the truth of the matter is, when you look at the trades, to bring in those five people, Price, Tulowitzki, Revere, Lowe, Hawkins, they gave up two significant pieces in Jeff Hoffman and Daniel Norris, maybe Matt Boyd, as far as, you know, high-level, close to Major League-ready significant pieces. The other guys were – there was a lot of filler. They got Mark Lowe for nothing. They got Ben Revere for a guy that the Phillies didn't even protect in the Rule 5 draft. So every system's got a lot of that. And the Blue Jays still have a lot of that. And they still do have 7, 8, 9 prospects that everybody wants. So if they wanted to, they could absolutely make a significant trade. I don't know if Shapiro and Atkins want to do that. But we'll see.
Ian, I think this is the first time I've really said this season, but where has the Red Sox offense gone? I mean, this offense has been, and every offense is going to hit lulls throughout the season, and there's going to be times when guys hit the, you know, slumping at the same time and the offense can't get it done. And maybe it's amazing that it's taken this long, but suddenly over the last couple games, the Red Sox offense has gone silent, and not because of a lack of chances, because a tough loss on Monday night, and they certainly had chances in that one. A tie game, bottom of the ninth, they had the bases loaded, nobody out, and they can't get a run in. They managed 4 hits only against Miguel Gonzalez of the White Sox, not exactly one of your top-of-the-line Chris Sale-type guys in that rotation. So is that what it is? The Red Sox, they're just all hitting a little skid at the same time?
Yeah, I think so, and it's all runners in scoring position, and, you know, David Ortiz is had a quiet couple games here, which is unusual for him as far as the you know, the production standpoint. And yeah, just you know, a bunch of guys they were so hot for so long that you had to expect there'd be some kind of drop off. But the encouraging thing is the pitching has carried them pretty well during the stretch, at least spots 1 through 3 in the rotation. Now 4 and 5 continue to be a little bit of a concern, and we're going to see Mr. Buchholz tonight. But yeah, it's a good. It's at least they're hanging in these games when they aren't scoring. They won a close game on Sunday, and they lost a real nail biter on Monday.
Yeah, and they end up wasting another Stephen Wright start that just jumps off the page as he goes 9 innings, allows just 1 unearned run, 5 hits, and I mean, you said pitchers 1, 2, 3, and when you say 1, I start to think that's Stephen Wright now, although David Price has been absolutely great the last 3 outings. But, man, Stephen Wright, you just keep waiting for the bubble to burst, and he keeps going out there and throwing inning after inning.
Yeah, he's been amazing to watch, really. He's just pitching with so much confidence. And, yeah, there's no question he's been their best pitcher this year, even after David Price. You look, he's pitched, you know, 9 innings 3 times here already this season. So it's been, you know, who could have predicted this and just how consistent he would be. And the only bad outing he's had all year to him has been in the rain. And a knuckleballer is never going to really pitch well in the rain because they rely so heavily on that grip. I mean, you can't grip the baseball, bad things are going to happen. But, yeah, you're just going to ride this as long as you can right here.
Now, the downfall and something that if they score in the bottom of the ninth, we don't even see is Craig Kimbrell struggling in the 10th in a non-save situation. And that's something that's kind of haunted him this year, which is weird because I don't think any other time in his career that's really been an issue, the non-save thing. We do see it with different closers that the adrenaline's not quite there or something's missing when it's not a save situation. Last night, though, a little different because it was a tie game in extras. It's not like he came in with a 5-run lead or anything like that. I mean, there was plenty of on the line with Kimbrell in the game. What did he have to say after the game about another tough outing when there was no save on the line?
Yeah, I mean, he downplayed the no save outing. He just said, look, leadoff walk killed him, especially the number 8 hitter.
Yep.
And then Abreu was trying to go you know, high and inside, I think, and he went low and away, as John Farrell said, right into Jose Abreu's hot zone, and he just crushed that pitch. So, you know, it is weird that, you know, most of Kimbrel's bad outings this year have been in your non-traditional situations, whether it is a non-save situation, tie game in extra innings, or, you know, sometimes they brought him in the 8th with runners on base, and he hasn't been able to get out of those. So he just seems like he's at his best in that traditional save situation, coming into a clean 9th inning. But, you know, he certainly has the stuff to do well in any situation. He's not a guy who needs a 3-run lead with nobody nobody on base to win a ball game. I mean, this guy has elite stuff, so I think right now I'd just say it's one of those fluky things, small sample sizes.
Roenis Elias struggled in his first start, and you mentioned it. Clay Buchholz getting another go tonight, and I feel like this is really a huge start for Clay. I mean, he's got to be running out of chances as far as giving him another shot to start. Here's an opportunity. What do you think his mindset is heading into it?
Yeah, I think Clay Buchholz is very determined. Like, he was very hurt, upset, out of sorts when he got taken out of the rotation. I've never seen him that mad. This the guy is the ultimate guy when it comes to talking to the media. He actually went a couple days where he didn't even want to talk to the media. He was so upset about getting taken out of the rotation. So I think in a way it was good to see that fire from Clay Buchholz, because it seemed like he was maybe a little complacent earlier in the year when he wasn't pitching well, and just they've gone through this guy's hot streaks and cold streaks throughout his career and have always stuck with him. And it's the first time that they really didn't stick with him in a long time. And I think that said something to him and said to him that he needs to pitch better. So really curious. This is kind of a must-watch game tonight, Tuesday night at Fenway, to see what Buchholz is going to do with his second chance in the rotation.
Yeah, because they really have to figure out the back end of that rotation. It seems like when you look at this team as a whole, that's the one glaring thing is those fourth and fifth starters that's going to separate this team from being a team that's playing in October or not. Rusney Castillo has cleared waivers as expected. No one was going to jump in and take on that contract. So that means he's off the 40-man roster. He goes back to Pawtucket. It's obviously a tough situation. The team invested so much money in Castillo. Now he's still in Pawtucket, but at least he's not taking up a spot on that 40-man roster. Are expectations gone for Rusney Castillo, or is there still a thought that this guy can figure it out?
My expectations are gone. I mean, maybe I'm being impatient, but you just haven't seen anything to lead you to believe that this guy's going to be a good major league player. You know, he's a supreme athlete, but it hasn't translated. Look, somebody pointed out to John Farrell yesterday that, Rusney did show you a flash for about a month last year between mid-August and I think the first week in September, where he was red hot with the bat. He was making things happen. And what John Farrell said was, hey, then teams made adjustments to him, and Rusney has not been able to adjust back to them. You know, and you need to be able to adjust. And he hasn't even had success at AAA this year. And he's just not elevating the ball at all. Everything's a ground ball. It's too bad because, he can play defense. He can run a little bit. But it's just, if you're not going to hit at all, just not going to help out at all on a major league roster. So at this point, I think just it's a bonus for them if Rusney Castillo ever does anything. I think it's easier when it was a previous regime with Ben Cherington and his front office that made this signing. I think it's easier for Dave Dombrowski to sort of say, okay, we just don't think this guy's any good. I wasn't the one who signed him for $72 million, so it's easy to just admit it was a mistake. They did the same thing with, Ben Cherington did the same thing with Alan Craig last year. So this is another bad contract or another bad acquisition by the Red Sox, and you just have to, leave him in the minors and see if he does anything to change the narrative.
Brittany, coming off a great week, the Orioles, 2-3 in Boston, 2-3 from the Blue Jays. That's exactly what you need to do against division rivals. But then a tough game on Monday night to kick off this week against the Rangers. Obviously, right now, the Rangers, the class of the West, they're playing great baseball right now. The Orioles had their chances, though. Man, 15 hits. But they just scratch across three runs. Six Orioles had multi-hit games. Just one of those frustrating games where you pile up the hits but just can't get the key one, right?
Yeah, pretty much. And it's really a frustrating week, Ben, because looking at the schedule now, they went to Texas for that one game. Now they're coming back here, not a whole lot of sleep. They've got that doubleheader coming up on Saturday. They're going to need a starter for tomorrow. So a lot going on with this Orioles team. And as you mentioned, really unfortunate because they make the trip all the way out there only to get a loss.
Yeah, and you mentioned starter on Wednesday. Any insight into that? I mean, they optioned Mike Wright down to AAA, so there's an opening. Somebody's got to get the ball on Wednesday night. If you had to make a guess, do you have any thoughts?
I think they'd like maybe Despaigne, Odrizimer, who came up recently, was starting in AAA Norfolk, was doing pretty well. Has come up to be that long man in the bullpen. Ivaldo Jimenez is another option, but he really hasn't thrown the ball well, starting or relief. So I think they'd like to give the ball to somebody else if they can. Now, there's always the potential of adding somebody from down below, but the way this team is situated right now, they're down a man, 24-man roster with Manny Machado serving his suspension. So really going to be difficult for them to make some roster moves just for that one game around it.
You mentioned Machado, and he'll be back soon, obviously, the four-game suspension. But the suspension snapped a 229-game playing streak for Machado, which in this day and age is about as long as it gets. I mean, that guys just don't play that many games in a row. What does that say about Machado to be able to do that? And he does it as most of the time a third baseman, but then moving over to short. Those are two positions that can take a toll as well. And here's a guy that just doesn't take a day off.
Yeah, seriously. Well, I think, one, if you ask Bucky, he would say what that says about him. He'd say, one, it means he's young. Obviously, you don't see too many guys that are veterans doing that kind of stuff. And it's such a grind, I don't think people realize. And when you look at what the Orioles have been able to do, when you look at what Manny has really meant to this team, being in there pretty much every game, I think the last time he sat out was either for a suspension or one of his knee injuries. So he's been remarkable. It's truly remarkable what he's been able to do. I think you're seeing one of the best young players, if not the best young player in Major League Baseball right now.
Yeah, and you mentioned the injuries, and I feel like there was a thought back then when he obviously missed a lot of time that, oh, maybe this is going to be a guy that's just going to have to battle injuries his whole career. But then he comes through that, and he has been, I don't want to say fully healthy, because all baseball players obviously get the bumps and bruises, but he's been able to get out there day after day for this team. The only thing that's been able to stop him is a suspension. But he will be back shortly for the Orioles, who overall, mention it, they had a good week last week playing good baseball, and they get Yovani Gallardo back. His first start, 5 innings, 2 earned runs on 5 hits. He did have 4 walks, so maybe he's still getting the command control back, and he struck out 5. But overall, that seemed like a solid effort and exactly what the Orioles were hoping for, at least in his first start back.
Yeah, I mean, he was okay, and that's really all the Orioles need their starters to be, because the offense is so good, and the bullpen's been strong even without Darren O'Day. So, as you mentioned, yeah, it's especially for the first start back. They don't need guys to go out there and light the world on fire. Most of the time, they just need their starters to keep them in the game, and that's really what they've struggled with. So if Yovani Gallardo can go out there and go 6-7 innings on a consistent basis, keep it to 3 or 4 runs, the Orioles like their chances. So getting him back, getting him healthy, I think could be really big for them down the stretch.
Yeah, they certainly one more guy, because they've had Tillman. Very few pitchers have been better than Tillman this season at the top. And then if you can just add one more guy to that rotation, this team is going to certainly be a tough team to beat. They've also been great at home, Brittany, and that's always kind of been a thing with the Orioles, right? I think they lead the majors right now with 26 wins. But something about Camden Yards, this has always been a team that embraces that ballpark. And it seems like they've, as an organization, they've always built the team around the ballpark.
Yes, that's right. And when you look at a team that can swing the bat as well as this team can, I think it would be foolish to not do that, to not construct a team that is able to really mash in Camden Yards, and that's what they've been able to do. So it's really something that, like you mentioned, it's really been the last few years. I think under manager Buck Showalter, they've been big on kind of picking players that fit the city and fit the clubhouse and fit the stadium. And Mark Trumbo fits all of those. As you can see, he's been fantastic for them. And when you look at how good they've been at home, it really covers up for a lot of mistakes. You can be a 500 or even a slightly under 500 team if you're playing that well at home. And that's what the Orioles have really been able to do. And they've got some tough road trips coming up. They go to the West Coast and a few other things in June and July. And I think as long as they can continue to win at home, they're okay if they just hold serve on the road.
We're in mid-June right now, so the trade deadline's still a ways away. You would hope the Orioles are looking like buyers. We'll see how big into buying they are come that time. But I had an interesting conversation with Jim Duquette just this week, Brittany, and I wanted to throw it out there for you. You tell me if it's a crazy idea or not. But if the Orioles are going to add pitching and they need to do something to shore that up, he had the thought that rather than go out and get another starter, why not add one more piece to that bullpen that's already so good and just shorten the games even more? Is that maybe an idea that this team could have at the trade deadline or even before that to help out the pitching staff? Instead of adding a starter, just add more relief and become a team that only needs 5 innings from a starter.
They could, though the problem with that is, and certainly something they could explore, but is the reliever going to be another guy who doesn't have any options? Because the issue they run into is when these starters only go two or three innings, you're not bringing in your premium relievers, and a lot of times you're going to have to make moves. And the lack of flexibility there could really hurt you if, you know, you've got Derek O'Day, Zach Britton, Brad Brock, Michael Givens, Dylan Bundy, all these guys you don't want to send down. I think that could present a little bit of a problem. But it's certainly an interesting idea, one I haven't really thought about in terms of an unorthodox solution. I'm under the impression that they don't even need a top-line starter. They just need another guy like Giovanni Gallardo, who's just going to go five or six innings and keep them in the game. I don't think they need to go out there and make a huge splash to get better.
Brian, I feel like the Yankees are in a decent place right now unless they're playing the Colorado Rockies. I don't know what it is. But they've certainly struggled. They struggled in Colorado, then they come back home, and they're struggling again. An 8-4 loss on Tuesday. Ivan Nova struggling again. Four innings. He allows five earned runs on eight hits. But it seems like, for right now, his position in that rotation is fairly safe just because right now there's nobody to replace him. But eventually you would think Luis Severino would be knocking on the door to come back to the major leagues.
I think he's actually knocking on the door right now. Obviously, they're seeing things with his pitch selection down to AAA that they're not happy with at the moment, but the results have been fine. His last start out, he allowed one run over eight innings. It's hard to ask a whole lot more of that, but you know what Joe Girardi's been saying is you get away with mistakes against AAA hitters that you would not get away with at the major league level. But my response to that would be, look, Ivan Nova's not getting away with them either. So six starts in a row, his ERA is almost seven, Nova is. And so if it is secure, his spot in the rotation, it can't be for long if he keeps pitching that way.
Yeah, certainly struggles, and they need a lift from that starting rotation. Slowly, though, the team starting to get a little bit healthier. Alex Rodriguez back in the lineup. He hit a home run on Saturday, number 695. So just five away from 700. Obviously, it hasn't been the type of season that Alex would have wanted or that fans would have liked to see, but I feel like five home runs is not too much to ask the rest of the way for him to reach that milestone this season.
No, I mean, look, if he's going to be healthy, he better get five home runs the rest of the way because they need some production in the middle of that lineup. And so they're hopeful that having Mark Teixeira back, and if you can get Alex on track, Carlos Beltran has always obviously been hitting. They still think it's in there. And Brian Cashman was saying yesterday that they think the Yankees are a better team on paper than they were last year. And last year's team obviously went to the wild card game and won 87 games. They just haven't shown that on the field yet. So it's getting late. There's still two games under 500 here in late June. If you're going to make a run, you'd better do it soon. But the Yankees do believe there's more in the tank. And for them to get where they need to be, Alex needs to be a productive hitter and be part of that lineup the way he was last year.
Yeah, and this was supposed to be a little stretch in the season where they could take advantage of the schedule. They did take three of four from the Twins, and they'll get the Twins again, so still that opportunity. But you'd like to see them beat the Rockies at home. Maybe they get that done this afternoon in that series. But I've been surprised, Brian, by how much talk there's been about are the Yankees going to be buyers or sellers? Because in my experience, they're always buyers. They're never really sellers, even if they're struggling. It's not like they're going to suddenly jettison a bunch of players. Obviously, they have valuable pieces in that bullpen that they could move and bring back some talent. But Brian Cashman's talked about it in the last week. Ownership has talked about it in the last week. I'm just shocked that we're hearing this much discussion about that topic in mid-June with the Yankees.
Yeah, it's a little surprising. I think part of it is the fact of the expiring contract that they have here, particularly with Aroldis Chapman. You've already seen Girardi use him 3 days in a row, which he really doesn't want to do. And to me, that suggests that Girardi knows this guy might not be around for much longer. He's kind of a hired gun. Maybe he knows something that we don't. They're not intending to re-sign him. Beltran, obviously, his contract is up after that. And after this year, next year, you were thinking that Aaron Judge will be ready to take over in right field. So he's a guy who could bring you back a couple prospects, maybe, if you deal him to a contending team. But the Yankees aren't ready to raise the white flag yet. And I think that a major reason of that is because Hal Steinbrenner doesn't want to. He's still sticking to the idea that they need to keep a championship-caliber team on the field, and they need to have those names out there, people to fill the seats that people want to come see. And if you start gutting this team in the late June, who's going to come out and see this team on July 25th when they kind of just conceded the race here. So I think that the Yankees are going to stay in the race as long as they possibly can. And look, if they fall double digits behind and they're getting to the deadline and it's just clear that there's no hope, then maybe you change course. But I think at this point you have to figure that you go with the team that you had, because clearly they thought this team, when you looked at it in April, was going to be good enough to compete and they could get leads to the bullpen and lock it down. The bullpen's been pretty good. They just need to score more runs. The starting pitching, other than CeCe Tanaka, has been questionable. There's still pieces here that suggest you could make a run, but as I've said, it's getting late. And just one thing about the Yankees being sellers, we were trying to figure out the last time that the Yankees actually did raise the white flag and move a major piece in the middle of the season. You might have to go all the way back to Ricky Henderson. That was 1989, so it's been a long time. Cashman says that they have made moves with the future in mind, but it doesn't happen very often here.
Been a tough go to a bit. We're also going to talk about a former Rays great, maybe returning to the team, although Bill Chastain is going to disagree with that, I believe. But let's get right into it, Bill. A tough weekend for the Rays. They run into a Giants team that is red hot right now. We continue to talk about the Giants in even years, and they have certainly been playing at their highest level right now as they sweep the Rays. The Rays did take 2 of 3 from the Mariners earlier in the week, which is a good series for them. But over the weekend, something that hasn't let the Rays down all season, it seems like, has been the bullpen. But a tough go of it. In 3 games, they give up 9 runs. But this is a bullpen that's been so reliable, this feels like a blip on the radar.
No, I would agree. I mean, it's kind of unusual for all three of the guys, Cedeno, Erasmo Ramirez, and Colomé, to all kind of implode on the same weekend. But it does happen. You know, that's baseball. But, you know, the timing was not the best.
Yeah, and I guess if they're all going to go at once, maybe that's better for the future rather than them taking turns having rough outings. But they all got it out of their systems, hopefully. The other thing that struck me from the week, well, you get some pretty good starting pitching, and then the solo home runs kind of continue, which continues to kind of taunt this team. But good starts from Odorizzi, that's good to see. A good start from Matt Moore, good to see. So even though they were swept, there were some encouraging signs from the weekend.
Yeah, I would agree. The starting pitching is starting to look a little better. But, you know, you'd like to see them, if you're a Rays fan, you'd like to see them finish the deal a little more. And I mean, just like yesterday, I know Odorizzi pitched well, really, to get through 6 because they got him kind of early as far as pitch count up, and he left after 111 pitches. But, you know, you'd like to see these guys maybe creep into the 7th and maybe help the bullpen out a little bit more. And of course, the other side of that equation is, you know, the bats in the last 5 games are 4 for 47 with runners in scoring position. So, you know, that's pretty lean as far as giving these guys much of anything, any kind of lead to work with, you know.
Yeah, when there's guys on base, they don't get hits, but then they hit home runs when nobody's on. It's not a good formula for success. You mentioned the innings, and Odorizzi, that's been a consistent thing with him is the pitch count, right? It gets up early, and he really seems like some starts he's lucky to get to the 6th. He got through 6 this time, but he's got to find a way to pitch to contact a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I believe he's allowed 39 earned runs all season, and 20 of them were in the first 2 innings. Yesterday, he got through the first 2 without giving up anything, which is, you know, encouraging. But you'd like to see him be a little more efficient. But sometimes, you know, batters and their approaches just make that hard to do.
Yeah, so those guys look pretty good. Chris Archer, though, has continued to struggle now. The right-hander, he's allowed at least 3 earned runs in 5 of his past 6 starts. Those aren't numbers from an ace. He continues to say it's one start at a time, and he's working through it. How concerned is the club about Chris Archer, though?
Well, whether they're concerned or not, they're not going to say it. But,
right.
You know, the numbers aren't good. If you look back to right before the All-Star game last year, you know, he's got a losing record, and the results have not been good. And I know he's a believer in the process. But, you know, you wonder kind of when they would be more like, well, we would like some results too, but you know, there's different, you know, ways you look at it too. It's like, you know, he's having good stuff, but you know, he's not locating his fastball, you know, but it's stuff like if you're an ace, it's stuff you're supposed to be doing.
Right. Exactly. At some point as an ace, the results have to be there. Some reinforcements seem to be getting closer. Bill, Alex Cobb through a live batting practice on Saturday. First time he's done that since the Tommy John surgery. How is he feeling right now? And are we still on that clock where we're thinking maybe late July, early August?
Yeah, I think we're definitely on that clock. And really the only comments, I wasn't there when he threw the other day, but I did hear his comments. And he said that, the only thing he feels right now is just getting his stamina up. You know, he hadn't had any setbacks with his elbow. I think that's very encouraging. They'll have a pleasant problem. And, you know, Chase Whitley's pretty much on the same timetable as him. You know, what are they going to do with him? So I think those are some good questions and a pleasant problem for the Rays to have.
Yeah, a good problem to have is too much pitching. A bad problem to have is not enough outfielders, and they're quickly heading in that direction. Steven Souza Jr. joins the injury. I mean, obviously, Kevin Kiermaier out, Brandon Guyer out, all three of those guys on the disabled list. And because of that, and because of what happened with the Dodgers releasing Carl Crawford, suddenly you start to hear those little whispers, Bill. Carl Crawford had the best days of his career in a Rays uniform. Obviously, he's no longer the player he was back then. You hear the talk. It sounds like you even hear that the Rays would like to have a conversation with him. But how much truth is there to that? And do they just want to talk to him, or are they actually serious about maybe bringing him in?
Well, I haven't heard any such conversations, yeah. But it has been reported that his agent said he might, Carl might be willing to talk to them if he was interested, if they were interested. But, and I believe that's the way I read it instead of the other way around. Okay. But, right now it might make a little sense. I mean, they're three outfielders down between Guyer and Souza and who's one I'm missing, and Kiermaier.
Yep.
So, probably a big consideration for Crawford. Of course, if no teams are asking for him, and how bad he wants to play. But, he did not like playing on that artificial surface. And you got to feel like he's probably hurting a lot more at this age than he was when he left the Rays. But he does have good memories of the Rays. And, I think the fans would love it if he came back.
Yeah, there's certainly a comfort level there. And the obvious draw for the Rays is that the Dodgers are going to be paying pretty much all the contract. The Rays would just have to pick up the league minimum. So he wouldn't be costing them much either. So it would be low risk, high reward. We'll certainly see. But right now, obviously, we're not close to anything like that. This team still, though, in search of a bat, certainly, Bill. And you look around the league at things that would fit not just this year, but the future. And one name that is intriguing to me, and I talked to Jim Duquette a little bit about this, and then talking to you, you said you thought about it in the past. Kyle Schwarber seems like a guy that would be such a good fit. Obviously, he's out for the year. He's not going to be playing in 2016 with the Cubs. But here's a guy that's controllable for years to come. He's affordable for years to come. And the Cubs are a team that would want pitching in return, which is something the Rays have plenty of. So as you look closer to the trade deadline and things like that, or maybe into next offseason, is Kyle Schwarber a guy that makes a lot of sense to be a fit for the Rays?
Oh, I think he'd be a great fit. But, of course, I don't think it's a possibility for the trade deadline because I don't think you're going to see the Rays want to make a trade for a player that can't finish the season. But, you look at the fact that Schwarber can play outfield, catcher, first base, and he's not a great fielder, but, and then you could put him at DH as well and would give you a great deal of power. And then on the other side of that, that Madden's familiar with, all of the pitchers the Rays have, and, who knows which ones are available, if one or all of them are available. Because, I do think it would require he's an impact player, and I think you would have to give up something to get him back.